The idea of merging human intelligence with a computer has intrigued a number of science fiction writers over the years. The most recent example is Mark McClellan's Upload, the story of computer hacker Raymond Kwan's journey from a state-run children's home to the point where he literally uploads his consciousness into a computer. So, what if you could do something like this? Place your life literally inside a computer and live in a perfect virtual world, would you? If someone you loved wanted to do this, would you object? If such technology existed, how should it be used? What do you think would be the ethical considerations? Well, those are just a few of the questions we'll tackle this hour on At Issue. I'm John Munson. Joining me this afternoon is the author of Upload, Mark McClellan, who studied both computer science and writing at the University of Michigan's Residential College. Mark McClellan, welcome to At Issue.
Thanks for having me, John.
Now, the future you write about isn't exactly a dystopia, but there are some unpleasant aspects. One of them is that many in the world you envision are addicted to virtual reality. Do you think that's going to be a problem going forward? I mean, we're sort of seeing it today, in a way, with people spending their lives in front of gaming consoles, seemingly.
Yeah, I do think that it's a problem now, and it'll probably just get a little bit worse as the worlds, the virtual worlds that we're able to participate in become more and more immersive. You know, I've personally had friends who kind of fell off the grid for a while when they were obsessed with a computer game. And, you know, I think that our lives are likely to become more and more virtual in a good way in some respects. You know, there, like, I think some of the benefits of social networking will just become greater as, you know, we are able to participate in social activities in a more immersive environment. But there's also the potential for it to really become, you know, an alternate life that's hard to walk away from.
Bob Wells, a character who's the head of the research team looking into uploading human consciousness to a computer, has a great quote that I wanted to share and talk a little bit about. He says, "The only way to avoid being outmoded by computers is to merge with them. It's just a matter of time." It sort of seems like that's the central premise or one of the main premises of your story. Do you think that's a fair statement? And do you believe that that's true, that we're eventually going to have to either merge with computers or be outmoded by them?
Yeah, I actually do believe that. And I'd say that's a fair assessment of, you know, the core concept of the book. Computers are just getting more and more sophisticated, and in many respects have, you know, surpassed us at things that we've always considered ourselves to be good at. You know, a very simple example, is, you know, chess was a game that humans created and excelled at. And at this point, you know, computers have outmoded us in the, you know, ability to play that game. And, you know, Watson's performance on Jeopardy, I think, was a kind of more interesting example, you know, because here was a computer that had educated itself by reading enormous amounts of information from Wikipedia and other encyclopedias, and was able to then use that information to best, you know, two of the other best all-time Jeopardy players. You know, and these are what I think are fairly early examples of achievements in computer intelligence. As computers become increasingly intelligent and more human-like in their ability to be creative and analytical, at the same time, I think that we are going to be outmoded, and it's just a matter of time before we want to be, keeping up with that. And I think we'll probably see that in small doses as, you know, we kind of bring technology into our lives through brain extenders, various means of improving our own cognitive abilities. But I think ultimately it's very likely that we will just want to merge with computers to get to the next level.
Well, what's the difference between, say, artificial intelligence? Maybe William Gibson has written a number of novels featuring that as a theme, and the kind of human-computer convergence that you're talking about in your novel.
It's a gray line in my mind. Artificial intelligence as it has traditionally been viewed, was or is the ability of a computer to achieve, processing feats that are similar to human intelligence in one way or another. Something as simple as driving a car takes a great deal of intelligence. Google has and others have achieved autonomous cars, basically, where a computer is driving the car. So artificial intelligence is, to me, it's a computer-based form of intelligence that mimics human intelligence or performs similar feats to a degree that makes us feel like, wow, this thing is really smart. Merging a human into a computer, the idea is that you're bringing everything about your personality and your history into that computer-based life form. So it's essentially taking everything that makes a person human and hosting it on a computer-based platform, where you then have replaceable parts, could theoretically live a much, much longer lifespan, and could then also potentially engineer the platform that you exist on.
It's easy to see how we're headed that way. I mean, haven't we already sort of merged with computers to some extent, considering some of the advances we've seen in medicine?
Yeah. Not just computers, but with machines as well. There's already, there are definitely great examples of us already bringing computers into our bodies. In simple things like, insulin dispensers, there's, the ability now to basically insert an insulin dispenser that's become a sort of a part of your body. In a sense, you could also think of something like a cell phone as being, essentially an extension of your intelligence. They're attached to us practically, to people who are kind of addicted to their smartphone. And I think that, we're just going to see more and more of that. Google Glass is an interesting possibility. The idea of wearable computers sort of is already, bringing the computer more and more into your own life and your own mental space. And what I'm projecting, I think, is really just a continuation of a lot of trends that we're seeing now.
We're talking about the book Upload. It's a new novel written by Mark McClellan. Mark is with me today on At Issue. Wondering what you think about all this. If someone offered you the chance to merge your consciousness with a computer, to literally upload yourself into a computer where you would live in a virtual world, would you do it? And if not, why not? If you would, what would your expectations be? Maybe you've read the book. Be my guest to call in and let us know what you thought about it. I mean, there are a number of ethical things, issues raised in the novel, and we are going to talk about them here. But would love to have your comments and questions at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. You can also email us. The address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And we're also on Facebook. Look for the At Issue page on Facebook, and you can leave your comment or question there. As I said, there are a number of ethical issues raised about this process in your novel. I mean, there's quite a bit of a debate going on in the world that you create. There's a group, a politically powerful group, that doesn't think that this is a good idea. What are their objections to uploading human consciousness to a computer?
So in the book, I created a political group known as the Naturalists. And at the time that the book takes place, so it's set in the late 2060s, at a time when researchers have figured out how to upload animals and are on the verge of being able to upload humans. But at this point in time, the upload process is actually a destructive process. meaning that the technologies used to scan the brain and the body, actually in traversing the body and in traversing neural pathways, it destroys the body. So it's basically it's a one-way ticket into a computer-based existence. And so there's the obvious risk that, you know, when you've taken a person and uploaded them into the computer, the copy that you get on the other side isn't really going to be that person. It could be just from technical limitations that the researchers aren't aware of, to more spiritual considerations. For people who believe that humans have a soul, there's the question of whether that soul can actually make the jump to a computer-based life form. So the naturalists really believe that humans have crossed a line and are becoming a little bit too godlike, and that especially with this concept of destroying the human and creating a computer copy, that it's just a fundamentally unethical step to take. You're putting the person at risk, but you're also toying with the very essence of what we believe human life to be. And moving it to an engineered platform where, we could then potentially, fiddle with the way that our brain works. They believe that it's basically transcending reasonable limits of how far humanity should go with technology.
We're going to continue our discussion in just a moment. We'll take a break here, and I want to invite our listeners to get involved again. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Let's say that Mark McClellan's vision is actually possible, that we could literally upload our consciousness into a computer and live that way. Would you do it? Do you think that's a good idea? Do you think it's? Do you have some ethical questions about that? How would you feel about it? And would it be attractive to you? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also send us an email, talk@WPR.org, or leave a comment on our At Issue Facebook page. Fascinating book, fascinating topic, I think. Find out what the listeners think. Upload, a novel by Mark McClelland. We have Mark McClelland with us for the rest of this hour. And you, if you care to join us. I'm John Munson. It's At Issue on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson. Here's what's coming up tomorrow morning on the Ideas Network. Nancy DiTommaso is the Vice Dean for Faculty and Research at Rutgers Business School, and tomorrow morning after 7:30, she'll be Joy Cardine's guest. And she's the author of The American Dilemma, which provides a comprehensive examination of the persistence of racial inequality in the post-civil rights era. She'll talk about how social media drives black unemployment. That's tomorrow morning after 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. This hour we're talking about the novel Upload, written by Mark McClelland. Mark McClelland is with me today on At Issue, and you can be too at 800-642-1234. The central character, your main character in the book, is a young man by the name of Raymond Kwan. Tell us about him. Who is he? What does he want? And why does he want to upload himself?
He is a fiercely independent young man with a childhood that was fairly loveless. He grew up with parents who were pretty neglectful, and was ultimately taken into custody by the state of Illinois, which is where he was originally born. So he's got a pretty tough background. He was naturally an introverted kid who's sort of me versus the world philosophy ended up being amplified by his circumstances. In the beginning of the book, you see a glimpse of his life in a state home, kind of get a feel for just all the sort of classic teenage pressures against a kid who's just doesn't fit in. And so he's sort of taking that idea to an extreme. But he's also very gifted with computers, and he believes, where a lot of other people are basically users of a computer, he quickly discovers the power of figuring them out and of taking advantage of them. And so he unfortunately has some slightly criminal inclinations. He gets a job with an elderly man who is doing him the favor of bringing him into his house as somebody to sort of take care of his robots and take care of his house. And he ends up basically creating a system that will watch the virtual life of this elderly gentleman, and create a replica of that man's life through basically emulating his speech patterns, like learning about his history. And this leads to a situation where Raymond, basically the old man dies during a virtual session. And Raymond allows the artificial personality that he's created to take over the old man's life, with the idea that he can then take over the old man's personal wealth as well. So that's sort of the very intro. He becomes obsessed with virtual reality, and he really wants to escape society that he feels is done him no favors. And he sees uploading as this sort of the ultimate way to escape the society, escape his legal, or I mean his, his criminal background. And so he's got this dream of uploading himself into a computer and then living out the rest of his life in a virtual world that he's created. He has very little experience with other people. He's quite antisocial, but he's still a good person at heart. Through the story, I'm trying to really take the reader through a story of self-discovery as he starts to appreciate the connections with society that he does have.
Yeah, and I don't want to give away too much of the story because people should read this book. It's a fascinating read. Pick it up. You'll have it. Don't start it late at night because you won't get much sleep. Let's go to the phones, and we'll start in Zion, Illinois, where Sarah is waiting to talk to us. And Sarah, good afternoon.
Oh, you got the wrong person. This is David.
Okay, I think we got two people on at the same time, and let's see if we can fix that. There we go. Let's go to Sarah. You're on. Go ahead.
Okay.
David, we'll get to you in a minute. Hang on. Okay, Sarah, go ahead.
Okay, well, first of all, I used to really love the books of Robert Charles Wilson, and he wrote about this a lot. And so I've kind of thought about it, and I think immortality is not such a great thing. And, I mean, there's this other writer, Gillian Bradshaw, who wrote a book about these energetic life forms that could live forever, but they ended up just disintegrating after millennia because they went crazy. So if I was going to be uploaded, I would want the option of being able to kill myself, because I think immortality, which your consciousness just would be, I don't want this consciousness forever. I don't want to be confined in it. And my other question is that the human brain is not a static thing. I mean, it changes and it makes new pathways and new whatever's in there. You know, it's growing all the time. And can you, if you're uploaded, could that process continue in an organic way, or would you be stuck?
And Mark, I just want to, we've only got about a minute until we have to go to a news break, so we might have to split the answer into two parts here. So maybe you could respond to the first part. Are the people uploaded, are they immortal? Would they eventually die or not?
The platform, the computer-based platform, allows you to have a much longer lifespan, potentially immortal, if you've got a good system administrator, essentially. And you know, that question of does immortality make sense, it comes up a lot, and I think different people have different responses to that. For me, there's so much to discover. The older I get, the more I want my life to become longer, because I feel like there's so much I can't do in one lifetime. Immortality, maybe you would kind of start to lose your mind a little. I don't know. But I'm inclined to believe that there will always be more to do, more to learn, and more possibilities to grow. And I see a lot of potential there.
Okay, and then what we'll do is we'll take a break for the news, and when we come back, I want you to talk about the second point being made here, and that is, mm-hmm. The brain is as it exists in our own bodies right now is constantly growing and changing, and in the world that you're imagining, would that be a possibility? And we'll get you to expand on that theme a little bit after the news. The other thing I want to talk about also a little bit is the technology that you envision and whether or not you think we're going to be able to get around Moore's Law, for example, at some point in the future. We'll continue our discussion with Mark McClelland, author of Upload, after the news. You can join us by phone. David, hang in there. We'll get your call right after the news. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. If you could be uploaded into a computer and live forever, would you? I'm John Munson. It's At Issue on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stick around. We'll be back after the news. This is At Issue on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson. My guest this hour is Mark McClelland, author of Upload. We've been talking about this book this hour, and we'll continue to do so. You're welcome to join us at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Just before the news, Mark, we had a caller who had a couple of questions. You answered one of them before we had to break. The other had to do with how our brain functions as we grow, as we get older. Our brain changes. We grow mentally. We have new thought patterns. We learn new things. How do you envision that happening in an uploaded brain?
So the sort of plasticity of a human brain is something that I think would be copied, emulated very closely in an uploaded brain. There's research already afoot to try to better understand the constructs of the neocortex, which is the sort of covering of a human brain that gives us the cognitive abilities that make us human. And I think that, there are constantly, connections forming and changing, and that would have to be part of a computer-based brain as well. Otherwise it just isn't a brain. It's basically a snapshot. It's like the difference between a computer that's running and just, something that's stored on a hard drive. In my mind, there would definitely be the ability for an uploaded person to continue to grow and have new ideas. Mm-hmm. There's even the potential to actually accelerate that. Currently we're somewhat limited by the constructs and capacity of our brain. If you could move a brain into a computer-based platform where we've got, we designed it and can theoretically improve it, you could actually make it so that you are better able to learn through the course of your life, and you're able to learn more. So I see that as actually being something that could improve with this technology.
Let's go to the phones again. And David, this time for sure, you're up. Go ahead.
Okay. To me, it's still a copy. There was another sci-fi novel to that effect, this robot. It was about intelligent robots, and one, they were just leaking their fluids, and they were going to stop processing, and then one of them asked, do you have a copy somewhere? And the other robot said, it doesn't matter. It's just like also, you know, the brain is the hardware and the mind's the software. And I personally, I would only do it if I was dying. And then I think if they did do it, I think there should be a law saying anyone going for immortality should be put on a spaceship going to the stars. Because you're going to live forever, you might as well go somewhere.
Thanks, thanks, David. Mark McClellan, a few things to chew on there.
Yeah, the idea that the brain's the hardware and the mind is the software, to me, is that's an interesting notion. To me, the brain is both. It's the hardware and the software, and there's really no, in computer science, we've got this concept of a program that's written that you load into hardware and then run. And that program is something that is portable, that you can take from one, from one computer to another. I don't think that the mind really is separate from the brain. I think that, I guess you could think of it as, that metaphor kind of works because you've got the brain as a starting point. But who you are is your brain. It is the way that the brain has developed over time. And to me, it's more or less is really one and the same. And I kind of like the idea, he mentioned that he wouldn't actually want to upload unless he's dying. And that's something that in animal research, in the book, they choose only those animals that are already, have some sort of illness or disease that is going to cause them to die. And they choose to only upload those animals because of the obvious risks involved. I can see, I think that those, people who are dying would certainly be the ones most compelled to make the jump and to risk having a copy of yourself made. But I think that over time that would actually change as the technology demonstrated that we can actually turn ourselves into, people who are potentially smarter and have better memories, are able to, to think in ways that, aren't really possible now. That's one aspect of this that I didn't really get into in Upload because it's all about kind of the first person to do it, is further down the road, this has the potential to totally change the nature of human evolution and to open up potentially huge leaps in our cognitive abilities, our ability to create, our ability to understand ourselves and our universe. So I think that would become the real appeal that would make people want to upload is the chance to basically become a better you.
And that's sort of the crux of this thing, building a better you. On the other hand, you're still tied to whatever box you're put into. You would require some external forces to be under your control to make sure that, the box still has power. Mm-hmm. You can be killed in the virtual world. There are things that, you can die. If your box doesn't have power or if it's damaged or destroyed, then your consciousness is toast. There are some limitations to this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're still bound to reality at the bottom of the stack.
Mm-hmm. When you were, I'm curious as to your writing process a little bit, and I don't want to get too esoteric with the questions here, but which came first when you were putting this story together, the story itself or the technology, the world of technology that you were inventing for this?
It was primarily the technology that came first. I read Ray Kurzweil's The Age of Spiritual Machines back in 1999when it came out, and I just got really excited about the technology that he described in that book, and the timeline that I project in Upload is actually based on Kurzweil's projection that by roughly 2070 we'll at least have the technology necessary to achieve uploading. And once the technology, once I started thinking about the technology, you know, I had came up with several different storylines that I could use to kind of play with it. And I thought that the combination of kind of a criminal slash heist story with one of you know, self-discovery and really start learning to appreciate our connection to each other, to, you know, to the real society, you know, that that kind of combination was exciting to me. And so the story followed from that.
Mm-hmm. Let's, I want to give the number again and make sure people know that they're welcome to join us here. 800-642-1234. Join our conversation about this topic. 800-642-1234. We're talking with Mark McClelland about his book, Upload. It's a novel. It has a crime story in it. It has computers. It has action. There's romance. There's kind of a little bit of everything in this tale set in the future. Michio Kaku, in his book Physics of the Future, says that we're probably going to run in, and it wasn't him saying, he was citing someone else, that we're going to run into a kind of a wall in terms of computing power around 2020 when we reach the limits of what we call Moore's Law. Mm-hmm. That's something that to get to the kind of science that that you're talking about, we're actually going to have to invent a different kind of computer. And you do in your book, because the computers we have now are pretty much clock bound. The one that you're envisioning would not be.
Yeah. The computer that I sort of envisioned was based on a core component that I called a neuristor. It's a little bit like a transistor, but it's this sort of base level of what's called neuromorphological computing, which is computing where the components are based on the same models as the human brain. And so you have a massively parallel, process that, it's basically, like you said, it's not clock bound. It's more like the neocortex in the human brain, where you have a tremendous number of pattern matching modules that are doing their work all at the same time, and it's in those patterns that thought emerges, and that recognition occurs, and that ultimately you can form new ideas, and the Moore's Law really was just talking about the ability to pack more and more into a transistor, or into a chip that's basically two-dimensional. There are already advancements in three-dimensional computing and in molecular-based computing that are likely to break free of Moore's Law. Moore's Law was just one example of this sort of exponential growth, and there have been many other examples throughout the history of computing and of information technology in general. I think that we will definitely, just in the, without even having to move into concepts of neuromorphological computing, just in like the traditional computing world, I think that we're going to far exceed the limits that are proposed just based on Moore's Law.
We need to take a break, and when we come back, we suddenly have full phone lines. So when we come back, we'll see how many of these calls we can get to before we run out of time here in this hour. Unlike in science fiction, we're not allowed to stretch the hours to include all of the content we would like. We're talking about the book Upload. We have its author, Mark McClelland, with us. And we'll see what our listeners have to say after this break. I'm John Munson. You're listening to At Issue on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 4 o'clock this afternoon, we're going to talk about a new report that examines the economic pluses and minuses of frac sand mining on rural communities in Wisconsin. And we'll also get an updated report on the German Road fire up in northern Wisconsin. That's coming up after 4 o'clock this afternoon here on At Issue. This hour, we're talking about Upload, a novel by Mark McClelland. Mark McClelland is with me, and so are a whole bunch of people on the phone, starting with Chris in Mount Horeb. Let's see if we can get Chris on the air. And Chris, are you there? There we go.
I am here.
Okay, go ahead.
Thanks for the show. Really good conversation. I want to pick up the book. Actually, 2 points I just wanted to touch on when you were talking about the Moore's Law. I can remember in the 90s, a friend of mine that was big into computers was frantic because it was like, we don't know what we're going to do, 900 megahertz. Nobody knows how they're going to make a computer that goes faster than 900 megahertz. And now we're up to, I don't even know what the limit is now. But my second comment was with the theory behind the story and everything like that, does Mark think that it's going to, this type of a thing in the future would be, with all of his research, be a preemptive to something similar to like the movie Avatar, where you're able to actually take somebody's consciousness out and put it into some kind of a inorganic mobile type of entity? Or, you know, is this like a preemptive type of thing to like an android type of thing where you'll be able to become a robot type of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's a fascinating possibility. In the world that I've sort of written about, because it's early days, they're very much focused just on the science of getting the brain copied. But there's no reason that it couldn't then be either. I mean, you could take the computer-based brain and place it into a robot, or some other, mobile vehicle or whatever. But there's also the potential for you to basically, you could think of yourself as living in the cloud and then occupying, physical devices within the world. So you could occupy a robotic body and interact with, other people on Earth. You could potentially, take that kind of brain into space travel and then occupy, a shuttle vehicle, a robot, something of that along those lines, and, continue to have a very, rich relationship or rich interaction with the real world, even though you're, a computer-based, you've got a computer-based mind.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Phil in Duluth next.
Hi.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, I was wondering how the author addresses the emotions of people, because I understand technology and I think it's a really interesting concept, but how do you create electrical devices that allow us to experience emotion? Because what's the point of living forever? I mean, I would love to, because I'd love to be able to learn forever, but the emotion is so much of who human beings are.
Yeah, we wouldn't be human without them. So my belief is that the entire body, including the brain, is ultimately a machine that is an organic machine. And that emotions arise from a mix of chemical and electrical activity within that machine. So my assumption is that you could replicate this, the same mechanisms in a computer-based life form. So that's actually something that I address a little bit in the book, is that he's not just uploading his brain, he's really uploading his whole body. Without your body, you're not your complete self. And, there are aspects of self that come from, the way that your neurotransmitters work and the way your hormones work. And it's a whole picture. It's easy to talk about the brain because I think that it's sort of the standard, box that we draw around this idea. But it really is a whole person, including their emotions. And I think it's just a matter of, figuring out the mechanisms of the human body and replicating them.
Phil, thanks for the call. Let's go to Jan in Wisconsin Rapids next. Jan, thanks for joining us.
Oh, great show. When I was in college, I read a short story science fiction about a man had given up himself to the computer so much that the computers took control, and the men that were left on the planet were nothing but globs of gel-like mass that lived within the belly of the computer. And when we moved, we left a slime trail behind us. And the name of the story was I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. It was by Harlan Ellison. It was a fascinating story, but it kind of leads to what you're talking about from another angle, I guess. That's all I had to say.
Yeah, hopefully, since we're driving the process, I'm hoping that we won't sort of subjugate ourselves into, just basically tools of the computer. But yeah, Harlan Ellison was a great writer.
Yeah, it was a great story.
Jan, thanks. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for the call, Mark McClelland. Do you have plans to do more writing in this world you created for Upload, or are you moving on to other topics?
Both. I'm sort of splitting my writing time right now. I'm definitely going to write another book in the realm of Upload. I don't think that it'll be a sequel per se, but it could have overlapping characters. And then I'm also working on a children's story that is something that's been kind of bubbling in the back of my mind for a long time.
One of the things you present, some of the pitfalls of uploading in your story, and some are technical, some are emotional and moral. You've obviously spent an awful lot of time thinking about this.
Yeah, it was 13 years writing the book.
Okay, that qualifies as an awful amount of time.
Uh-huh.
Do you think the next one will take 13 years, or now that you kind of have the path worn down a little bit, it'll maybe be a little easier the next time?
Yeah, I'm definitely trying to shift my focus a little bit more toward writing. Mm-hmm. I'm a software developer, as my day job, and I definitely am moving more into writing and hoping to be able to dedicate more time to it.
As I was reading this, I was wondering if you had been approached by anyone who wanted to turn this into a film. Any interest there?
I would love it. I think that there's a lot of potential, but no, I haven't been approached by anybody yet. And I've gotten a mix. Most readers that I've talked to felt that there really is a lot of film potential. I think I tend to think visually, and that that sort of comes through in my writing, and perhaps it lends itself well for it.
Well, you certainly have all the qualities here that Hollywood is looking for. You've got some science fiction going on. There are heroes and villains, and heroes who don't look like heroes at first who become heroes. And there's romance. There's a lot going on here. So, I hope somebody picks this up. Well, listen, if they can make a movie out of Pride and Prejudice and zombies, they can certainly do Upload.
I agree.
Mark McClelland, thank you so much for an enjoyable hour. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mark McClelland is the author of Upload. He is a software developer, and he studied computer science and creative writing at the University of Michigan's Residential College. You can find out more about the book at uploadthenovel.com, and I believe there's also a Facebook page for that as well. So, have at it. This hour of programming was produced by Katie Mattson. We had on-air production today from Michelle Good. And we'll be back in just a moment with another hour of At Issue. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.